Chapter 45. Nuthanger Farm again. Cry havoc and let slip the dogs of war. Shakespeare, Julius Caesar. At that moment, General Wundworth, out on the open grass below the bank, was facing Thistle and Ragwort in the checkered yellow moonlight of the small hours.
"You weren't put to the mouth of that run to listen," he said. "You were put there to stop anyone breaking out. You had no business to leave it. Get back at once."
"I give you my word, sir," said Thistle, querulously. "There's some animal down there that is not a rabbit. We both heard it."
"And did you smell it?" asked Wundworth.
"No, sir. No tracks or droppings either. But we both heard an animal, and it was no rabbit."
Several of the diggers had left their work and were gathered nearby, listening. A muttering began.
"They had a hombo that killed Captain Mallow. My brother was there. He saw it."
"They had a great bird that turned into a shaft of lightning."
"There was another animal that took them away down the river. Why can't we go home?"
"Stop that," said Wundworth.
He went up to the group.
"Who said that? You, was it? Very well. Go home. Go on. Hurry up." "I'm waiting. That's the way. Over there."
The rabbit did not move. Wundworth looked slowly round.
"Right," he said. "Anyone else who wants to go home can get on with it. It's a nice long way, and you'll have no officers, because they'll all be busy digging, including myself. Captain Vervain, Captain Groundsel, will you come with me? You, Thistle, go out there and fetch Captain Campion. And you, Ragwort, get back to the mouth of that run. You had no business to leave."
Very soon, the digging was resumed. The hole was deep now, deeper than Wundworth had expected, and still there was no sign of a fall. But all three rabbits could sense that not far below them there lay a hollow space.
"Keep at it," said Wundworth. "It won't take long now."
When Campion came in, he reported that he had seen three rabbits running away over the down to the north. One appeared to be the lame rabbit. He had been about to pursue them, but had returned in response to the order brought by Thistle.
"It doesn't matter," said Wundworth. "Let them go. There'll be three less when we get in." "What? You again?" he snapped as Ragwort appeared beside him. "What is it this time?"
"The open run, sir," said Ragwort. "It's been broken in and stopped from down below."
"Then you can start doing something useful," said Wundworth. "Get that root out. Know that one, you fool!"
The digging continued as the first streaks of light began to come into the east. The great field at the foot of the escarpment had been reaped, but the straw had not yet been burned, and lay in long pale rows upon the darker stubble, tenting over the bristling stalks and the weeds of harvest. Knotgrass and pimpernel, fluellen and speedwell, heartsease and persicary, colourless and still in the old moonlight. Between the lines of straw, the expanse of stubble was as open as the down.
"Now," said Hazel, as they came out from the belt of hawthorn and dogwood where the pylon stood, "are you both sure you understand what we're going to do?"
"It's a tall order, isn't it, Hazelra?" answered Dandelion. "But we've got to try it, that's certain. There's nothing else that'll save the warren now."
"Come on then," said Hazel. "The going's easy anyway. Half as far now the field's been cut. Don't bother about cover. Just run in the open. Keep with me, though. I'll go as fast as I can."
They crossed the field easily enough, Dandelion running ahead. The only alarm came when they startled four partridges, which whirred away over the hedge to the west and sailed down, spread-winged into the field beyond. Soon they reached the road, and Hazel halted among the quickset on top of the nearer bank.
"Now, Blackberry," he said, "this is where we leave you. Lie close and don't move. When the time comes, don't break too soon. You've got the best head of any of us. Use it and keep it too. When you get back, go to ground and Gihar's run and stay there till things are safe. Have you got your line clear?"
"Yes, Hazelra," replied Blackberry. "But as far as I can see, I may have to run from here to the iron tree without a check. There's no cover."
"I know," said Hazel. "It can't be helped. If the worst comes to the worst, you have to turn for the hedge and then keep popping in and out of it.
Do whatever you like. There's no time for us to stay and work it out. Only make sure you get back to the Warren. It all depends on you.
Blackberry burrowed his way into the moss and ivy around the base of the thorn. The other two crossed the road and made uphill toward the sheds beside the lane.
Good roots they keep here, said Hazel, as they passed them and reached the hedge. Pity we've no time just now. When this is over, we'll have a nice quiet raid on the place.
I hope we do, Hazel Ra, said Dandelion. Are you going straight up the lane? What about cats?
It's the quickest way, said Hazel. That's all that matters now.
By this time the first light was clear, and several larks were up. As they approached the great ring of elm trees, they heard once more the quick sighing and rustling above them, and one yellow leaf came spinning down to the edge of the ditch. They reached the top of the slope and saw before them the barns and the farmyard. Birdsong was breaking out all round, and the rooks were calling from high in the elms, but nothing, not even a sparrow, moved on the ground. Straight in front, on the other side of the farmyard, close to the house, stood the dog kennel. The dog was not to be seen, but the rope, tied to the eye-bolt on the flat roof, trailed over the edge and disappeared across the straw-covered threshold.
"We're in time," said Hazel. "The brute's still asleep. Now, Dandelion, you mustn't make any mistake. You lie in the grass just there, opposite the kennel. When the rope's gnawed through, you'll see it fall. Unless the dog's ill or deaf, it'll be alert by then, probably before, I'm afraid. But that's my lookout. It's up to you to attract it and make it chase you all the way down to the road. You're very fast. Take care it doesn't lose you. Use the hedges if you want to, but remember it'll be trailing the rope. Get it down to Blackberry, that's all that matters."
"If we ever meet again, Hazel Ra," said Dandelion, as he took cover in the grass verge, "we ought to have the makings of the best story ever."
"And you'll be the chap to tell it," said Hazel.
He moved away in a half circle to the morning side and reached the wall of the farmhouse. Then he began to hop cautiously along the wall, in and out of the narrow flower bed. His head was a tumult of smells: phlox and bloom, ashes, cow dung, dog, cat, hens, stagnant water. He came to the back of the kennel, reeking of creosote and of rank straw. A half-used bale of straw stood against it, no doubt clean bedding which, in the dry weather, had not been put back under cover. Here at least was one piece of luck, for he had expected to have trouble in getting on the roof. He scrambled up the straw. Across part of the felted roof lay a torn piece of old blanket, wet with dew. Hazel sat up, sniffing, and put his forepaws on it. It did not slip. He pulled himself up. How much noise had he made? How strong was his scent over the tar and straw and farmyard? He waited, tense to jump, expecting movement below. There was no sound. In a terrible miasma of dog smell, which gripped him with fear and called run, run down every nerve, he crept forward to where the eye-bolt was screwed into the roof. His claws scraped slightly, and he stopped again. Still there was no movement. He crouched down and began to nibble and gnaw at the thick cord. It was easier than he had thought it would be. It was a good deal easier than the cord on the punt, though about as thick. The punt cord had been drenched through with rain, pliant, slippery, and fibrous. This, though dewy on the outside, was dry cord and light. In very little time, the clean inside was showing. His chisel-like foreteeth bit steadily, and he felt the dry strands rip. The cord was as good as half through already. At that moment, he felt the heavy weight of the dog move beneath him. It stretched, shuddered, and yawned. The rope moved a little, and the straw rustled. The foul smell of it came strong in a cloud.
"It doesn't matter if it hears me now," thought Hazel. "If only I can get the rope bitten through quickly, it doesn't matter. The dog'll go to Dandelion. If only I can be quick enough to make sure that the rope breaks when it begins to tug."
He ripped at the cord again and sat back for a quick breath, looking across the track to where Dandelion was waiting. Then he froze and stared. A short distance behind Dandelion, in the grass, was the white-chested tabby, wide-eyed, tail-lashing, crouching. It had seen both himself and Dandelion. As he watched, it crept a length nearer. Dandelion was lying still, watching the front of the kennel intently, as he had been told. The cat tensed itself to spring. Before he knew what he was doing,
Hazel stamped on the hollow roof. Twice he stamped, and then turned to leap to the ground and run. Dandelion, reacting instantly, shot out of the grass to the open gravel. In the same moment, the cat jumped and landed exactly where he had been lying. The dog gave two quick, sharp barks and rushed out of the kennel. It saw Dandelion at once and ran to the full extent of the rope. The rope went taut, held for an instant, and then parted at the point where Hazel had gnawed it to a thread. The kennel jerked forward, tilted, fell back, and struck the ground with a jolt. Hazel, already off balance, clawed at the blanket, missed his footing, and fell over the edge. He landed heavily on his weak leg and lay kicking. The dog was gone. Hazel stopped kicking and lay still. There was a spurt of pain along his haunch, but he knew that he could move. He remembered the raised floor of the barn across the farmyard. He could limp the short distance, get under the floor, and then make his way to the ditch. He raised himself on his forelegs. On the instant he was knocked sideways and felt himself pressed down. There was a light but sharp pricking beneath the fur across his back. He lashed out with his hind legs, but struck nothing. He turned his head. The cat was on him, crouched half across his body. Its whiskers brushed his ear. Its great green eyes, the pupils contracted to vertical black slits in the sunshine, were staring into his own.
"Can you run?" hissed the cat. "I think not."